Today's program is brought to you by Tabard Inn, new American cuisine in one of Washington, D.C.'s oldest hotels, located in DuPont Circle. For more information, visit tabardinn.com.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. We're a member-supported food radio network broadcasting over 35 weekly shows live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. Join our hosts as they lead you through the world of craft brewing, behind the scenes of the restaurant industry, inside the battle over school food, and beyond. Find us at heritageradionetwork.org.
Welcome to Feast Your Ears. I'm Harry Rosenblum from the Brooklyn Kitchen. Join me every Wednesday as I talk with people about what they do and how it influences their personal food stories. This is a show about people, life, and food. Welcome, everybody. This is the second Feast Your Ears of 2018. I pre-recorded last week's episode back in 2017, so this is my first day back in the studio. And we're having a nice sunny day here in Brooklyn. It's a little bit warm, I think, for the season. It was in the 40s today. Pretty nice. So today's episode number 94 of Feast Your Ears. Coming up on 100, we'll have some kind of celebration in March. Today, joining me by phone, I have Adam Cantor. And Adam is a Broadway actor and also founder of Story Course. And I'm really looking forward to chatting with you today, Adam. Thanks for joining me.
Thanks for having me here.
So let's jump right into Story Course. So, as I understand it, Story Course is a immersive kind of interactive dining experience where the diners take part in the storytelling of the story of the chef. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. I got together with a guy named Brian Bordanik, who was the head of a company called Dinner Lab, and I'm from the theater world. I'm in a show right now called The Band's Visit. In fact, I'm backstage right now. We have our matinee in an hour. And I've always been a foodie and also very interested in how food can play a part in storytelling. And, you know, on Broadway we deal with lights and costume and text and music, but food taste is never really incorporated into the picture. So my question was, how can we combine these worlds of theatricality and culinary arts to create an experience that is really unique and that takes the audience member on a real journey through food? And Brian and I were dealing with different concepts. We first were adapting the Salvador Dali cookbook, Le Dîner de Gala, into a sort of immersive experience.
Oh, neat. Did that ever come to fruition?
Sorry?
Did that ever come to fruition? Did you create an immersive experience?
We did sort of a private workshop of it where I gathered creatives from the Broadway industry, and Brian gathered folks from his Dinner Lab days, and we sort of just put heads together and came up with these wild concepts, and it's all exciting, and it's still kind of in the works. But shortly after we did that workshop, we produced an immersive Passover Seder, where we sort of built this like Bedouin tent in Midtown, and we had one of Brian's chefs, Nini, a Vietnamese chef, who she cooked this like amazing Passover Seder. It was her first time cooking any kind of like Jewish meal, but she did an amazing job. And we had, you know, some Broadway stars and playwrights and musicians and spoken word artists, shadow puppet artists. We had Ari Shapiro from NPR. We had all the sort of a hodgepodge of creative types creating this immersive Seder and telling this story of Exodus, which is told every year on Passover. Telling it through food and performance turned out to be really powerful today in New York City.
Yeah.
So we rethought how we want to move forward, and we thought, okay, we're in a city teeming with immigrant chefs, and we're essentially consuming stories on a daily basis without necessarily fully grasping in an emotional way or really in a storytelling way what's behind this food that we're consuming. There are so many rich stories which would make the food, you know, even more rich in terms of the experience behind eating it. So we thought, why don't we talk to some chefs? We started with Brian's chefs from Dinner Lab and try to find a story that we can tell through a coursed meal. So we landed on Jay Jung, who is cooking at La Bernadette right now. And we spent many hours interviewing her and really getting a sense of her story of migration from Seoul, Korea to New York City and her relationship with her mother along the way. And it's funny, I had recently finished doing Fiddler on the Roof on Broadway, which is really a story about the balance of tradition and modernity and how do you maintain a sense of your roots while moving forward, especially when you're forced to leave your home. So that in many ways became, it became clear that that is so many people's narrative, including Jay's. It was really about her relationship with her mother and maintaining her sense of home while leaving. So we interviewed her for many hours, and we transcribed those interviews and collaborated with a Korean playwright named Hansel Jung to really pare down Jay's story into what became six delicious courses, and each course pairs with a chapter. And the stories themselves are told in an interactive way. In other words, the audience is handed scripts. Of course, if anyone does not want to read, they don't have to. It's kind of like a Passover Seder in that way.
Right.
Have like the Haggadah of Jay.
That's great. I mean, when you and I first met, that was and you described Story Course to me, that was the first thing I thought of. I mean, for listeners who grew up Jewish, it's a, you know, that's a real touch point, I'm sure. For those of you who didn't, if you've been to a Seder, I'm sure you understand that, you know, you go around the table and each person, if they don't want to read, they can be skipped, but pretty much each person at the table is expected to read and retell part of a story that as you get older and you've been to a Seder every year, you know, I've now been to like almost, I've been to 40 of them, you know, there's, you know, at least, you know the story, right? Like it's sort of like going to see Shakespeare or a Broadway play. If you're in that world and you already know the story, but you go anyway, and you know what's going to happen next, but you still retell the story.
Right. And I think what's exciting about that, I mean, Passover Seders can be like notoriously boring,
yes.
Right? Like it can be filled with dread of like, oh, I got to sit through this long Seder experience. And part of our goal in doing that Seder was to kind of reinvent it and modernize it and make it really fun and delicious and unique. And I think we've brought a lot of that spirit into Story Course, into Jay's story. The stories themselves, first of all, are pretty short, and they're really fun and interactive in a way that, like, you know, we have some awesome Broadway pros who put their hands on it and made it something that is really user-friendly. And you don't have to be, like, an orator or a performer to really to just be able to speak these words, and there's you know there are group moments, and then there's also some performance. There are unique elements where the audience can kind of just sit back and not partake, and just enjoy the sort of the more traditional kind of performance. But we found that it's really, the audience becomes really invested in the story. They kind of take it on. And there's something interesting that happens. We didn't want to make it just, you know, actors around a table and everyone just kind of sits passively. We wanted the audience to really be active in the story. And it does something when you are putting your mouth around these words and then putting the food in your mouth. There's something that's really powerful. There's
a level
of investment that's beyond what I've experienced in a Broadway theater.
Yeah, I mean, you're asking someone to come to a dinner, right? I mean, I feel like certainly Dinner Lab did a great job of expanding the idea of people coming together to have dinner and to learn about different cuisines. And this is such a natural extension of that. How many people generally attend a Story Course event? How many seats are there at the table?
So our next iteration is in February. We have eight evenings that are on sale. We have a few that have already sold out. But each evening fits about 30 people. So it's pretty intimate. And we're all around one long table. And there's a cocktail hour. We have cocktails designed by Dave Arnold and Don Lee. So that's pretty awesome. And we have wine pairings and six courses, 30 people. It's about a two-hour experience. And it's really delicious.
And where can people find tickets?
you can go to www.storycoursenyc.com. Awesome. And there's a link for tickets and a section about this this dinner, which is called "How Do You Hug a Tiger?" That's our sort of the title of this show.
Cool. And yeah, I mean, you know, you've called it a show. We've called it dinner. We've called it an evening. I guess it sort of falls, you know, it falls in between all of those things, and it encompasses all of those things, right?
Definitely. It's a real hybrid experience. It's unique. I haven't experienced anything like it. I'm hoping that this is unique for most people. We did a week of it last summer at the International Culinary Center, and you know, we had some really exciting people came through. Bryan Cranston, the actor from Breaking Bad, amongst mm-hmm. many other things, came through, and he loved it. And you know, we had a lot of Broadway people and food and, you know, culinary people. It was pretty close to friends and friends of friends. But this is our first time we're really getting the word out there. So, you know, it was a big success last summer. I'm really excited to see how it plays with, you know, with an extended network of audience members. I think the concept and the format is relatively well honed, so that you don't have to be, you know, you don't have to be in the food or Broadway world to really appreciate it.
Right. And do you think, I mean, you know, sort of playing this out, I mean, as someone, I used to work in theater, I used to be a designer, so I spent lots of time in, you know, around plays and musicals.
Oh, cool.
And tech rehearsals and all of that. You know, do you think that this is something where, you know, how do you hug a tiger, you know, might only play these 8 nights, let's say, and then in 2 years you might do it again?
I think the goal is to build these scripts and to build these formats with different chefs, and then eventually have a home of our own where we can sort of be rotating, kind of like a repertory theater company.
Very
you
cool.
know, a few nights a week is How Do You Hug a Tiger? A few nights a week might be our next experience, and we're actually developing our next story course experience with an Iranian chef who has this, you know, amazing tale of his parents migrating during after the fall of the Shah, and being apart for many, many years and finding each other again in North America. So very kind of different cuisines, different kinds of stories and different modes of storytelling, I think. So hopefully people can come one night, experience one meal and one kind of show, and come another night and experience something totally different.
Very, very cool.
I do think as to whether or not there will be more life for How Do You Hug a Tiger, I don't know. I think it's strong enough that there should be.
Yeah.
It's just a question of, you know, logistics.
And is it the kind of thing, you know, like, say, a musical or a play where, you know, if someone wanted to produce How Do You Hug a Tiger and do a similar event in Chicago or in San Francisco, does it require the chef to be there, or is it something where you can provide both the script and the dishes and tell that story with someone else cooking the food?
I think there could be somebody else cooking the food, but there's something uniquely powerful about hearing this chef's story and seeing her cook the food in the kitchen.
Yeah.
And without giving away too much, there is the chef herself does have a presence in the kind of show of it all. So there is something special about having her there. Ideally, for this format, she would be present. But I think there are ways to expand this concept as well. I mean, I'm thinking about even just a story/cookbook, you know, kind of like an illustrated storybook that also has the recipes of each dish. The way it kind of plays out in the format is that we read this chapter together, and then at the culmination of the chapter, the dish is presented that correlates with that chapter. And the dish really... It represents what we just read together in many ways, in terms of the taste experience, the way it looks, what it represents symbolically. So I think there are, you know, there are ways we can build on this concept, especially in a kind of story cookbook.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, I mean, ideally, we would love to do this in other cities. I think ideally, Jay would go with us to do it.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I love the format of it, and I hope that if you do have a space with doing things in repertory, I hope that you would do your Seder during Passover, because that actually sounds like a much more pleasant Seder than many that I have attended, as you point out, about them being long and boring.
You know, they're sort of all rules are thrown out the window, but we do maintain, of course, the essence of the story and the main Seder points. In fact, we are gearing up for another one beginning of April, just a one night only, so be on the lookout for that as well.
Please keep me posted. We're going to take a short break and hear from one of our sponsors here at Heritage Radio. And when we come back, I want to talk a little bit more about what it's like to be an actor on Broadway.
Take a sip from your chalice chest and I bow my head to you. Cause kicking myself with beer, waste of bruises, and you won't allow that can do. I know it will get easier over time. Take off the chase, we'll swim it up the rise.
The following program has been brought to you by Tabard Inn. Tabard Inn, Washington, D.C.'s quintessential small hotel, is located on a quiet, tree-lined street just 5 blocks from the White House. Vibrant yet unassuming, the Tabard is comprised of 40 sleeping rooms, each unique in character and design. Feast on eclectic American cuisine in their acclaimed restaurant, or enjoy a cocktail and listen to live jazz in one of their cozy Victorian seating areas. Mingle with travelers from around the world who find the Tabard the only place to stay when taking their travels to Washington. For more information, visit tabardinn.com.
Welcome back to Feast Your Ears. I'm Harry Rosenblum, and really pleased to have Adam Cantor joining me by phone. If you're just tuning in, we've been speaking about Story Course, which is presenting its, evening of dinner and story and performance called How Do You Hug a Tiger, coming up in February. You can find more information at storycoursenyc.com. There are 11 performances, but according to the website, I'm looking at it right now, 4 of them are already sold out. So if you want to go, you better get over there pretty soon. So before the break, Adam, we were talking about Story Course and sort of the idea of sharing the stories of a cuisine and of a specific chef and of an immigrant experience and how you share that kind of at these events. I'm wondering if you have any kind of thoughts on, you know, how can we take those ideas and put them into practice on a regular basis? Because I think they're really valuable. I think understanding, especially in the current political climate, about where immigrants land and sort of the immigrant stories in America and how that's influenced our food. I'm wondering your take on that.
Absolutely. Well, if you live in New York, definitely check out the Museum of Food and Drink. They have a great exhibit going on right now about Chinese food in America.
Absolutely.
But, you know, I mean, I think one of the greatest things about living in New York City and, you know, many cities across America is the opportunity to eat cuisines from all over the world. And not just to eat them, but to be consciously aware of, you know, that there's a story behind each of these dishes. And, you know, that you're eating the food that somebody's grandma might have made for them. And, you know, I often wonder when you hear comments from politicians, et cetera, you know, against immigration, I wonder what kind of food they had for lunch and, like, if they actually thought about where that came from. But, you know, I think, I guess, one of the easiest ways is just experiencing the food and being aware of the stories behind them in some way, or investigating them. That was the goal of Story Course, was to investigate stories and to tell them through a dining experience.
Yeah, awesome. So I'd love to talk about your Broadway career. You've been in a number of shows, and as you said, you're waiting backstage. You guys have a matinee today, so I assume Wednesday is a two-show day for you.
That's correct. In fact, in about 5 minutes, I got to get into my costume.
So tell me a little bit about the show that you're in now.
So it actually fits in line of what we were talking about. This show is called The Band's Visit, and it's about an Egyptian police orchestra band that travels to Israel for a concert at the Arab Cultural Center in what they think is Petah Tikva. And they're aiming to get to Petah Tikva. Well, they end up by a set of circumstances in the town, in this little town in the middle of nowhere called Beit HaTikva. So it's a very, you know, it's an easy mistake. And then, so they're in the middle of nowhere, and the whole show takes place over the course of one night with this little town of Israelis who are taking in this group of Egyptians. And it's based on a film of the same name. We did the show had an off-Broadway run last year, and it played to great acclaim critically and in terms of the audience. And we reopened on Broadway a couple of months ago, and it's been doing great. And we have we've got a fantastic cast. Tony Shalhoub is plays the head of the Egyptian band. And Katrina Lenk is the cafe owner in Beit HaTikva, who decides that we will take in this town of this group of Egyptians for the night. And I play one of the Israelis in the town.
Cool. So as an actor, I mean, what I understand of the Broadway schedule is that normally you're doing 8 shows, right?
Yes.
And so that's a pretty intense schedule. What are your what are your eating habits like? I mean, I ask all of my guests. I sent you the same questionnaire, and one of those is midnight snack. And you point out that midnight is often dinner time for those of you who work on Broadway. So, you know, that most of us. I mean, I'm usually well asleep by the time you're just having dinner. So, you know, tell me about a normal day and sort of like, what is your schedule like and what do you eat?
Well, I mean, it's funny you ask that because you might have heard, I don't know, over the intercom a few minutes ago, the security guy at the stage door said, "Adam, your food is here." So I order into the theater. Today I'm having Thai food, I'm having curry. And, you know, you often order to the theater. I'll sometimes even eat between scenes. It's kind of like take it where you can get it.
Yeah.
I probably should have a more regimented schedule. What I'm finding is that there are so many similarities, actually, between working in a theater and working in a kitchen. It's kind of like that level of hustle, this sort of it's intense and it's nonstop. I mean, there's a level of glamour to it, but really, I think what people are surprised by is the level of grit as well.
Yeah.
And you know, you go to the fancy parties and you have the opening nights and the good meals, and then you have the moments where you're just like, you know, scarfing down some grub backstage before, you know, between rehearsal and performance.
Right.
So it's the high low for sure.
Do you have any favorite late night spots in Midtown?
Oh, that's a good question. Well, I mean, right across our theater, right near our theater is Restaurant Row, which usually I avoid because it's a lot of tourist traps. However, I really do like Sushi Seki. Just opened up on 46th Street, and they have some rolls that I really love. Their spicy scallop hand roll is fantastic. So I'll sometimes do a late night at Sushi Seki. There's also, you know, in terms of like a theater staple, there's Joe Allen, and the food is good, but the ambiance, the history behind it is great. There are posters all over the walls of flops. Like every Broadway poster on the wall is a show that has completely failed on Broadway, which is cheeky and fun.
Yep.
And then sort of like a little industry secret is just upstairs from Joe Allen is Bar Central. And you have to, anyone can make a reservation, but it's this tiny little bar. And you have to reserve it 1 week in advance. And every time you're there, it's kind of like a who's who. You'll see, you know, stars of different shows and TV shows hanging out. And their food is good. And they have a great bartender. That's a great hangout. And then just across from my theater is Glass House Tavern, which is sort of the more casual version of that. It's very industry, insidery after shows. You'll see a lot of actors hanging out. They have this really great, truffle risotto ball. So there are some good options in the muck of Times Square.
Do you ever have time to cook?
No, very rarely. I just bought a slow cooker.
Ah, nice.
So I'm trying to, I just did my first, I did the chicken tikka masala on that, which actually turned out okay.
Cool. Yeah, so you can put it on your way to work and it'll be ready when you get home kind of thing?
Yeah.
You mentioned in the questionnaire that I asked if you could have dinner with anyone, it would be Salvador Dali. I didn't realize at the time that you had actually worked on a piece related to him.
Fan.
Yeah.
And in the preparation of this, of that workshop, I went to the museum in St. Petersburg, Florida, and I've been to his museum in Spain. And I actually randomly collaborated on a musical about him, like many years ago.
Wow. So, you know, I guess what I was going to ask is in the modern food kind of scene, what do you think he would want to eat?
Oh God. Whatever he would say would be way more creative and crazy than I could ever come up with at this moment. So I have to revere that in him, but I love the question.
where's your family from? Like, what is your immigrant family story?
Like most New York Jews, it's a Eastern Europe hodgepodge. It's Lithuania, Poland. In fact, before Fiddler on the Roof, I did like a trip to research my ancestry through that area, and that was really eye-opening. Some good food too. I learned to really love borscht.
Oh, yeah. I guess that really makes you that role was really perfect for you as Motel in Fiddler.
Thanks.
We're reaching the end of the show here, but I wanted to find out if there's anything else that you wanted to make sure that we know. People should come.
Just that I'm really excited about this round of Story Course, and I'll be after my show on Broadway every night, I'll be running down to catch the end of dinner and have some dessert and say hi to guests. So please come by, say hi to me. I'll be there at the end. And I hope you really enjoy.
Great. Well, I will definitely be picking up a ticket for Story Course, and I encourage everybody else to do the same. Again, you can find that at storycoursenyc.com. You can follow Adam if you want more information about that or about his time on Broadway and himself.
Oh, I almost forgot. I'm sorry.
Yeah, no, go ahead.
We have a discount code for your readers, for your listeners, if that's of interest.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's just eat your story. One word, eat your story.
Awesome. Well, everybody should definitely make use of that. I was going to mention that people should follow you on Instagram at Adam J. Cantor. If they want to see pictures of sort of what you're doing, and do you know what you're going to be acting in next, or is the current run kind of open ended?
This run is open ended, and I'll be here for a while because I love this show and I love this company. So I'll be here for a while. We have the Tony Awards coming up in June, so hopefully we'll get some recognition and be able to run a long time.
Awesome. Well, I look forward to coming to check out that show as well. Well, thanks so much, Adam, for joining me.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, everyone, for listening to Feast Your Ears today. Big thank you to David Tatasciore for engineering this show. You can find Feast Your Ears, as well as lots of other great shows, at heritageradionetwork.org, on iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts. Please take a moment to like the show on iTunes or Stitcher, if you do, in fact, like it. If you have any questions for me, you can reach me via email, harry@thebrooklynkitchen.com, and you can follow me on social media, @thefoodballer. Talk to you next week.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter @heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.